Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.5 here in the Matsu Valley, and just about any time on mushingradio.com. We are not continuing our Mushers series tonight. We have on a special guest. Her name is Dr. Susan Dent. She is a veterinarian up here in Alaska. She operates a company called Wildwood Mobile Veterinary Clinic, and she travels around to folks' homes, gives them vaccinations, pretty much any veterinary care that is possible, with the exception of major surgery. So without further ado, I want to introduce our guest tonight, Susan Dent. Susan, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. If you can, give us a little bit of info about yourself and who you are and what you're all about.
Okay, well, as you said, I have a mobile veterinary clinic. I've been doing that for a couple years now, ever since I retired from teaching science at Palmer High School. And I travel around and see small and large animals, pretty much any domesticated animal I'll provide medical service for. And I've been quite enjoying that.
You know, you have a pretty cool setup. You travel around in a travel trailer pulled behind your truck, and you make your way up the Parks Highway, typically from the Palmer area, up as far as Denali Park. Tell us about how that operates.
Well, about once a month, depending on how cold it is, I load up the camper and the trailer. And we'll spend a day at Willow, and then we'll move on up and spend a day at Trapper Creek. And then we've gone up as far as Healy. And then people just come in sort of on a drop-in basis, and I take care of their medical needs for their pets. And it's been really fun getting a chance to camp out and see some different parts of the community and meet some really neat people.
And, of course, with that service, you deal with a lot of mushers and all of our gaggles of dogs as well, don't you?
I sure do. It turns out quite a lot of my clientele have been mushers.
So, obviously it's a mushing show, so we know all about how veterinary science works, at least in our world. But for the casual fan, how does it work for, you know, a musher and his 30, 40, 50, 60-odd dogs, and it comes that time of year where we need shots, wormings, vaccinations, whatever. How in the world is that possible with what you have to offer?
With a lot of mushers, as I'm sure a lot of your audience knows, there's a lot of their own vaccinations for those that they're legal to do. But for the rabies, it's state law that those be given by a veterinarian. So that's where I come in. And I've done it several ways. I've either gone out to the dog lots and vaccinated the dogs like that. I've had people bring their dog trucks to my clinic. And one time I thought it was pretty cool. A musher harnessed up his dogs, and mushed over to my trailer, and I vaccinated the dogs right in harness. It was pretty neat.
Very cool. And, you know, today we are going to focus on those vaccinations. A show or two ago, we had a pretty good debate going about the importance of vaccinating not only sled dogs but all pet dogs. And, of course, there's an ongoing debate going on whether we should or should not vaccinate on a particular schedule, whether it be the year schedule, the three-year schedule for rabies, et cetera, et cetera. Before we get started, can you give us a little idea of a typical schedule? Let's talk about pet dogs for a minute, not necessarily sled dogs. What is an appropriate vaccination schedule from puppyhood to adulthood for that typical pet dog?
Oh, that's a good question, Robert. A real typical puppy We'd like to start them at pretty close to 8 weeks of age, and at that time we'll give them a combination vaccine, and that combination vaccine has a number of vaccines in it against different diseases, distemper, hepatitis, paroinfluenza, adenovirus, and of course most people know about parvovirus. And that vaccine then carries the puppy on over until they're about 12 weeks of age, and at that time we'll repeat that same combo, but also we'll go ahead and add a different vaccine agent in there for leptospirosis. And then finally at 16 weeks of age, we'll give them that last combo with the leptospirosis, and at that time give them their rabies vaccination.
And then, of course, that continues on throughout the dog's life, at least in a perfect world. And that's the controversy that we've heard about over the last few shows, the yearly vaccinations for the various diseases, the parvo, the influenza, et cetera, and then the multi-year rabies, whether it's a one-year or a three-year. And I know some different states have some different laws on what's required and what's not, but what is the law here in Alaska? Is it 1 year, 3 years, what?
Here in Alaska, after a puppy's had its first vaccine, then a year later, that now an adult dog will get another rabies vaccine. And then now the vaccines are good for every 3 years after that. And that's for rabies. And fortunately, we find that that same schedule works very well for the other combination vaccines, distemper, parvo, and lepto. Those also can follow that same schedule. So owners can, you know, bring their dog into the vet, you know, for all those shots at one time.
So the debate is going on is that dogs as well as people receive too much of these vaccines on a too frequent basis. What is your opinion of that?
Well, you know, anytime you inject something into an animal or person or give them medicine, there's going to be side effects. So you really have to, you know, consider risks versus benefits. And I think it's good that people are looking into that. The AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association, has done a lot of research and basis on, you know, lots of experience, and they've come up with a schedule that they think is appropriate. And certainly for dogs that are exposed, this would be, you know, dogs, for instance, you know, sled dogs and field trail dogs and dogs that are competing. Those definitely dogs should certainly have that sort of schedule. You know, I think there could be a case you've got your 12-year-old family pet that isn't, you know, getting out and the owner isn't, you know, exposed to other dogs. I don't really have a problem with skipping the vaccine for that dog.
So if we can, Susan Dent is our guest. She is a veterinarian up here in Alaska, deals with a lot of sled dogs and, of course, a lot of your typical pet dogs as well. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about these particular illnesses and diseases? You know, a lot of us throw the words around, the parvo, the parainfluenza, the leptospirosis, you know, all of those things we hear about as pet owners, but a lot of folks don't know anything about the diseases or illnesses themselves. Can you run down for us in your typical five-way vaccine, what those illnesses are or diseases, and maybe just give us, you know, the Cliff Notes version of each one?
Yeah, sure. Of course, parvo is the one that people are most familiar with, and that's because it's a pretty common disease. You know, we see it every year in lots of puppies, and it's a very severe disease, potentially fatal. So I think most people are pretty comfortable with, you know, knowing that, you know, disease needs to be vaccinated against. Most people don't have a problem with that. That's what, when people call me to get their puppy vaccinated, they want to make sure it gets the parvo, and that's a good thing. And that disease causes severe intestinal damage. It's pretty sad. It's a very sad way to die, I'm sure, from, you know, bloody diarrhea and dehydration. So it's definitely something we don't want our pets to have to experience. Distemper is another one that people have heard of. We don't see it nearly as much as we used to because of the good vaccinations. We see it sometimes as outbreaks. Well, you know, people will get a little cavalier about their vaccines and let them drop, and then they'll go around in a community. And that disease is also potentially fatal. It's the dogs show a number of signs, usually high fever, nasal discharge, their paws get all hard, and then eventually gets into the brain. And even if they survive that disease, those dogs are never the same again. The other diseases, the parainfluenza and adenoviruses, those are more like a they're a much more mild disease, but they do cause coughing and the same sort of thing that you might expect with a flu or a cold in person, a little bit more severe. Those diseases usually aren't fatal, but the dogs get pretty sick. And then finally is hepatitis, and this is an infectious disease that damages the liver and can also be fatal. It has some sort of vague sort of symptoms, you know, that can look like other diseases with maybe some vomiting and some loss of appetite and then just sort of fading away.
And then, of course, we have leptospirosis and rabies. I definitely want to talk a little bit about rabies, but what is leptospirosis?
Okay, yeah, thank you for bringing that one up. Yeah, leptospirosis is a disease of the kidneys. It's a little spirochete, spiral-shaped bacteria, and it isn't super common. It is what we call an emerging disease. It's becoming more common. So some people get a little bit concerned about vaccinating against this disease because it's not very common, but it is very severe. And one of the things that is really concerning about leptospirosis is it can spread to people, livestock, wildlife. It's pretty opportunistic, and so can be really quite dangerous, you know, to everyone. If your dog gets sick, you can get sick from it, and I don't know if you've ever known anyone with a kidney disease, but it's pretty tragic. So it's one of those ones that, although it may not be that common, it's because it's potentially fatal and because it can potentially spread to people, it's something that we really want to be sure that we protect our pets against.
And, of course, the big boy is the rabies. A lot of people, when they think of rabies, they think of, you know, the foaming mouth Cujo-type dog. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, rabies is a horrible disease, and there's a number of different ways that it can manifest itself in our pets. You know, there's the dumb form and the rabid form. So the dumb form meaning the animal becomes more subdued. But what's really scary about rabies is once again, it's contagious to people. And once a person shows signs of rabies, if they were to have been exposed, it's fatal. There's only one person ever who has survived rabies after showing signs.
Wow.
So it's a very horrible disease. We're fortunate up here. We haven't seen much of it in bats in the lower 48. Some people have been bitten by bats and not known it. They were asleep and later on get rabies and die. So,
holy cow.
It's definitely something that we want to protect against. I saw when I was in veterinary school a video of a little boy with rabies, and it was just really so tragic. It really, you know, brought home to me the importance of vaccinating against rabies. And I know we're talking on a musher show here, but mushers have cats too, so it's real important to remember to vaccinate rabies against cats. My own brother, when he was a little boy, was visiting a cousin in Minnesota, and our cousin got attacked by a rabid cat. And my brother, I think he was only 8 or 9, was able to kill the cat with a shovel. And they, you know, tested it and found out the cat had rabies. And the cousin had to be treated, you know, prevented with injections to keep her from getting rabies. And she got quite sick from it. So it's definitely a problem. It's definitely a problem here in Alaska. We see in the wild population more in the northern and western coastal areas from the Arctic fox and wolf. But, you know, our dogs move around in the states. So it's something that we got to protect our pets against.
At least from a human public health concern, that is the one that most people are worried about, isn't it, the rabies? At least when you talk about vaccines, that's usually the one that comes up most often, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so from, you know, for the public health. I think it's mostly just, because it is such a tragic disease. But I think if people knew a little bit more about lepto, they'd be pretty alarmed about that one, too.
So You had mentioned that a lot of folks, mushers in particular, give their own vaccines. Typically, we can buy them online at a pet store or at the local feed store. We'll buy a lot of 25 and just go around and shoot up the whole kennel, and pretty much that's good enough for what we're trying to do, at least as mushers. But why is it required that a veterinarian administer the rabies vaccine?
That's a good question. There's, you know, several layers that we need to consider in answering that question. One is because this is a state-mandated vaccine. And so it's very important that the vaccine be handled correctly and be administered properly. And I have seen pets come down with, for instance, parvo, who had supposedly been vaccinated at home already, which tells me that there was some sort of problem. Either the vaccine wasn't handled properly, or the person didn't give it correctly. These are, you know, really important to be done, or wasn't given at the right time. So part of the part is that you really need to know what you're doing when you do it. And, you know, the licensed veterinarian has had a lot of training in that. But then also it comes down to the legalistic aspect of it. And maybe to illustrate, I can tell you a story about an acquaintance of mine who's had inadvertently let his dog lap some of his rabies vaccine, and the dog nipped a child. And the borough was within their legal rights to ask him to euthanize his dog because the dog was not vaccinated. Well, this dog was this man's, you know, constant companion, and he was absolutely heartbroken, and he called me up and asked if I would say that I had vaccinated the dog. Well, of course, I wouldn't do that. My, you know, not only is it morally wrong and ethically wrong, but I could lose my license. So I'm at a much higher, as a licensed veterinarian, I have a, you know, much more at risk, whereas if that had been, you know, just his neighbor that had said, you know, did you vaccinate for rabies, that person might be a little bit more likely to fudge on that than a veterinarian who's, you know, kind of held to a higher standard.
And I know in my dog training practice, we deal with a lot of aggressive dogs, and I've worked for a long time in Denver, and one of the first things that happens to dogs that bite people, at least down there, is the dog is quarantined for a period of time, and then, of course, they find out if the dog has been vaccinated, and if it has, there's a chance that the dog is returned, et cetera, et cetera. What is the status of something like that up here in Alaska? If a dog has bitten somebody, and yes, it has rabies, but are dogs in Alaska quarantined for a period of time until that's verified?
Yes, and it does depend on the vaccine status. Now, in the case of this acquaintance of mine, he was able to convince the state to allow him to quarantine the dog instead of euthanize it, which was a very good thing. But he had to convince the state to do that. So that is one of the options, is quarantine. And certainly if a dog has bitten someone, whether they've been vaccinated or not, you need to quarantine them. And the reason is dogs that do have rabies, once they've bitten someone, they will almost always show signs of rabies within 10 days, and then that gives the person who's been exposed a chance to get the rabies treatment.
Is the tag on the collar good enough proof if a case like that happens, or is there another layer of proof that must be established?
Oh, that's a great question, Robert. And obviously, anyone can pick up a tag. So it's important that people keep their rabies vaccine certificates. Many veterinarians will keep copies too, but you know, everyone can make mistakes and those can be lost. So I think it's really important for everyone to be responsible to hang on to their certificates, which prove that their pet has been vaccinated.
At least in my kennel, I know a lot of other mushers and active dog folks don't even put the tags on the collars because they get yanked off or ripped off or lost. So we typically just keep them in some type of kennel log, and they travel with us to races for vet checks and that sort of thing. Do you recommend something like that?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Most people, when I vaccinate the dogs, they don't, you know, take the little S-hook anyway to hang them onto the collar because it seems like they invariably fall off. So we'll just tape them to the rabies certificate. Some people, though, do, especially if you just have a few pets and the pets aren't that active, they'll often use those, put those on their collar as a form of ID, too, in case the dog gets misplaced. You can often track the dog down with that rabies number to find who owns them.
We're talking to Susan Dent. She is the owner of Wildwood Mobile Veterinary Clinic up here in Alaska and also pretty much the go-to expert, at least for now, on our show about vaccinating and vaccinations for sled dogs. This year, Susan, is a requirement on the Iditarod that dogs have to be vaccinated for Bordetella or kennel cough. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that, in particular the disease, what it is, how do dogs catch it, et cetera?
So kennel cough is sort of an umbrella term that includes a lot of different sort of agents that can cause the disease, both viruses and bacteria. However, there is one specific bacteria called Bordetella bronchoseptica, which is particularly pathogenic. In other words, it makes the dogs really sick. They don't, I think it'd be pretty rare for them to die from it, but they're going to get really sick, and it's very contagious. So we do have a vaccine available against Bordetella. Now, it's not going to prevent all kennel cough because there are other agents that can cause it, but we have a vaccine that works pretty well against the Bordetella. You know, not all vaccines are created equal, and the kennel cough vaccine is probably not our best vaccine as far as effectiveness. The immunity is maybe only for about 6 months on that. What we do is we give them, as with most vaccines, we'll start with an initial vaccine, and then in about 3 to 4 weeks we give them another vaccine, and then with a couple days of that, then the dog has their best protection. But that immunity might only last about 6 months, so it's something to keep in mind. Dogs that get Bordetella, the reason it's called kennel cough is because it's usually occurs when dogs are in stressful situations, such as being kenneled. But it's also, as you well know, competitive dogs are also under a lot of stress. So working sled dogs, field trial dogs, those dogs are also at risk for getting kennel cough. So it's a good idea to vaccinate those dogs before they're exposed to those situations.
And, of course, on a race like that, Iditarod, you had mentioned that it can run through 1,600 dogs very quickly because it's so contagious. And over the last couple of years during the race, a lot of dogs came down with that. What can be done about it if the vaccine is so ineffective, not ineffective, but you know what I'm saying, kind of weak, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
What can be done to prevent things like this on a race such as the Iditarod, something as large scale as that with that many dogs?
Well, you know, that's a good question. But I think the best thing you can do is, you know, vaccinate them against the Bordetella and do everything you can to have your dogs be at their absolute peak of fitness for the competition because, you know, there's just no 100% guarantee. So as long as the dogs are, you know, really strong and have under good nutrition and fit for the race, that's going to help them a lot, and that's probably about the best thing you can do.
You know, two more questions. We have about 8 minutes or so to go. Susan Dent is our guest tonight, veterinarian up here in Alaska. Susan, you had mentioned that that a lot of times folks give these vaccinations wrong, whether they're administered wrong or handled wrong. And I know the typical rule of thumb, at least from us musher folks, is we keep the batch in our refrigerator and give them as they're needed before the race season or whatever. What is an appropriate way to keep, store, and administer this lot of vaccinations for our dogs out there in the dog yard?
Well, you gotta make sure that it was good vaccine in the first place. So, you know, you might be cautious about where you buy it from. I'm really comfortable for the way I buy it. I get it delivered on ice, and when I open up my styrofoam container, there's still ice in the container, so I know that it was kept cold. So you know, that's number one, is to make sure it was good vaccine to start with. If you bought it from your neighbor who drove around with it in his truck for a few days, you know, maybe you're not so sure, or maybe the feed store has good, you know, care, but, you know, I don't know that. So that's the first thing, is to make sure that the vaccine was good in the first place. Then it's a matter of keeping it at refrigeration temperatures. That's like between, you know, 33 and 45 degrees. You don't want to freeze it, and you don't want to let it get too warm. Most of these vaccines now are the single dose, and that's the best way to get them, as opposed to, you know, sometimes you can get vaccines where there's, 10 doses in a vial, but it's much safer to do the single dose. Mix it up if it needs to be mixed up using a good, aseptic technique. You're not, getting dirt into it. And then you give those injections under the skin and just, have to watch carefully to make sure that you didn't accidentally go inside and in one side and out the other. If you do, no big deal. Just drop and give them another shot. Most of the time, people do a pretty good job of this once they've been taught how to give an injection under the skin. It's important that it's under the skin and not in the muscle. And it's important that you don't give it in the vein, but that's really, really hard to do. I should make a comment that there are some people who like to use the intranasal vaccine for the kennel cough, and it's really important that if you've bought that intranasal vaccine that you give it intranasally. If you inject it in the dog, that could be a big problem.
And what about the needles? Common practice is, I assume, is folks will reuse the plunger or the syringe part of it. What about the needles? Should they be new for each dog and each dose?
I think they should. They're only a few cents each, and you risk contaminating the dogs, the next dog as you inject over and over again. But also the needle gets dull and it's going to become more painful for the next dog. So I use new needles and new syringes every time, and I would recommend that too.
My last question, and of course we can definitely follow up on anything else you want to mention, is, experience in 20 years of mushing, the sled dog is a pretty hardy breed, and very seldom do we have to take our dogs to the vet for anything other than your routine care or the typical fight or bite or injury or accident. But by and large, they're a pretty hardy breed. How do you think that they compare in relation to your typical pet dog, the lab, the golden retriever, the German shepherd that most folks have sitting around the house watching TV with them at night?
Well, they're, certainly a different breed, and it's interesting. Prior to doing this mobile clinic, I was working in a traditional office and saw sled dogs in the office, and I found that, wow, they're totally different on the vinyl floor inside our veterinary clinic versus when I get to see them out in the dog lot. So compared to your average pet, when I see a sled dog in the clinic, they're definitely, not used to being indoors, most of them, certainly not all of them. They have a different sort of behavior. But mostly I've found them to, because they're handled and taught to behave and respect people, that they're really easy to work with as far as giving them their treatments.
What about illnesses and that sort of thing? Do you find that since these dogs are around so many dogs so much of their lives that they are a little, quote-unquote, immune to some of these, like maybe the pet dog isn't?
I don't think I've seen that. I guess I haven't noticed that. It seems like they also are exposed to a lot more things than the average pet dog is too.
Right.
Not only that, it's a lot different, a working dog versus a dog whose job it is to sit on the couch. And we found that working dogs really, it's harder on them over their lifespan than a dog who doesn't have to work. And that's whether it's a guide dog or a sheep dog or a mushing dog. A working dog definitely has a lot more stress on them than the average pet.
So we have 1 minute left, Susan. Do you have anything you want to mention in closing? I'll make sure that we post links to your Facebook page and all that on our show page when we're able to do that as a podcast. Anything in closing?
I suppose I should say that for those of you who are vaccinating your dog, it is very rare, but occasionally there are some allergic reactions. Most of the time they're not severe, but you should have on hand some Benadryl, pure Benadryl without any other additives in it, so that if your pet or your sled dog does have a reaction, that you can give them that right away. And that does a dose of 1 mg/lb. And the other thing I'd recommend is if you're doing your own vaccination is to do that during business hours, Monday through Friday. In the very rare chance that there is a problem, then you're going to have an easier chance of getting some help from a veterinarian.
And my piece of advice there is never a substitute for the good veterinarian either.
Well, thanks, Robert. I appreciate that.
There you go. Susan Dent is our guest tonight. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Susan Dent, we'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.
Bye.